Good morning. I was very excited this morning to drive toward the church building and actually need to put my sun visor down on the car. So we are here in the sunshine, and we're actually got a story about light that we'll be talking about today. If you're visiting with us, we're glad you're here. Hope you'll be uplifted by your time here with us and that we can get to know you a little bit as we're done. Just a good Sunday to be together. I've enjoyed the songs that we've sang and the prayers that we've prayed, and I hope that Dan is not keeping a list of my sermons to decide which ones should never have been preached in the first place and which ones need to be preached again. It's hard not to go into preacher mode as I was thinking that this morning. This morning, we're going to be in Mark chapter 9. Mark chapter 9. And I want you to think for a minute about either the most amazing thing you have ever seen, or maybe the most amazing experience you have been a part of. And I think for each of us, things come to mind. And there are the obvious ones in my mind of, I have a child who is going to be turning 16 in a couple weeks. Yeah, that's what I said. And I still remember being handed the scrubs to put on and being there and being handed this baby. And I just being amazed and scared and excited and everything all at the same time. I can remember the same process with both kids, although with Nathan's it was much more exciting, and we'll tell that story a different time. I remember being at the College Church of Christ on December 11th of 1999, and the doors opening in the back, and seeing the most beautiful woman I had ever seen back there start to walk my direction, and not just being able to take that whole moment in. I remember being baptized. I remember the feeling of coming up out of that water. I remember baptizing both of my kids, one of them here right behind me, and the feeling of that. And then when I shift out of the obvious life things, I start thinking of just amazing things I've seen in life. A lot of them are sports things that I've watched, and or some been present for, and some watched on television. Sometimes it's just a perfect sunset. Sometimes it's going over to the coast and seeing that whale fin come out of the water for the first time. Whatever it might be for you, just the most amazing thing you have seen or been a part of. One of my go-tos throughout life has been, right before we got married, I sang in a group and we toured around the country and went to lots of different places and got to sing. And one of the times we got to sing, we got to open for the Beach Boys, which to everyone under 40, you're thinking, who? And to everyone else, you're thinking, wow, that's pretty cool. And it wasn't all of them, obviously, because I'm not that old. But it was several of the originals. I think there were two or three of the originals there. And it was not nearly as exciting as it sounds, because basically it was we passed backstage and there was kind of a nod and a hello and all of that, but nothing too exciting. There's not even a picture of the two of our groups together to remember it by. I have one newspaper clipping so I can prove it. And if anybody tells me about something exciting I've done, that's a story I go to. Now, for Peter, James, and John in this story, whatever your most exciting one that you come into your mind with, theirs is going to trump it by everything. Theirs is going to be so much bigger, so much greater, that they're going to be a part of this thing. And amazingly, as it ends, they're told not to talk about it. And so we're going to pick up the story here at the beginning in verse 2 of Mark chapter 9. After 6 days, Jesus took Peter, James, and John with him and led them up on a high mountain. Now, we start to see something here about Jesus, which is he has crowds that follow him. He has people that are considered disciples that go beyond the 12 that tend to follow him around some. He has those 12 apostles that are his main core group. And then even within that group, he has a core group of 3 that he tends to take along for the really big stuff. And Peter, James, and John get to experience things even a little more than the average apostle does. He led them up on a high mountain, where they were all alone, and there he was transfigured before them. Now, if you're anything like the average person when it comes to this chapter of Mark or other places where it's recorded, and you run into the transfiguration as you're heading, or transfigured before them, you probably start to think to yourself, what in the world does that mean? That's not a word we use a lot. We don't talk about anyone or anything being transfigured or a transfiguration. And basically the idea here is, he takes on this form that's going to be described as shining like the sun here. But he is somehow, his appearance has changed before them. in a way that none of us have the ability to change our appearance. And they are put in this spot of just undoubtedly knowing that there's something very, very unique about this man in front of us. There he was transfigured before them. His clothes became dazzling white, whiter than anyone in the world could bleach them. And there appeared before them Elijah and Moses, who were talking with Jesus. So we have here Elijah and Moses, and immediately there's kind of a divide among those of us who are here, because if you have grown up in the church and you've heard these stories and you've gone to Bible classes and VBSs, you have probably made yourself pretty familiar with Moses and Elijah. Now, for a lot of folks who have not grown up in the church, or some that don't go regularly or don't study the Bible a lot, these two names may not mean a lot to you. Now, I like to think that most people would have heard of Moses at this point, but I don't want to assume anything. I have a good friend, Brian Fuller, who came and spoke to us a couple years ago for our youth rally. And I remember him telling me the story about when they first got married, they lived in this apartment complex in Arkansas, and they made good friends with their next-door neighbor, who was a single lady. And she came over for dinner one night, and she sat down, and they were eating, and Brian's wife, Carissa, had this habit we used to joke about a lot in our family of every time we would come, she would mention she was trying a new recipe. And we thought we were the guinea pigs, but this lady next door came over, and she was talking to them about this TV show she had watched the night before, and it was on the Learning Channel or Discovery, one of those channels, and it was about this guy, and his name was Noah, and this guy, Noah, built this giant boat, and there was a big flood that was coming, and he started to bring animals into this boat because he was afraid the animals would be wiped out. And some being spoke to him and said, build this boat and put these animals on it. And they're just amazed sitting here because here is a lady who has no idea of the story of Noah and the Ark. Never heard it before in her life. And I think we forget sometimes, and if you're among us and you don't know who Moses and Elijah are, you're probably not alone. There's a lot of folks out there that these are new names to. So real quickly, and if you want to know more about Moses, we're studying Moses on Wednesday nights right now. You can come learn all about him. Moses comes along in the book of Exodus at a point where the Israelites are in captivity. They are in slavery. And Moses comes along as God's leader to take the Israelites out of slavery. Moses is a very reluctant leader, like a lot of us might be sometimes. And Moses does not want the job. God keeps trying to convince Moses that he's the guy for the job, and Moses keeps telling God all the reasons why he's not the guy for the job, and then eventually we find out he really is the guy for the job. And Moses leads the people out of slavery and leads them gradually toward the promised land. Elijah comes on later in the Old Testament. Now, basically, you can break down the Old Testament into this period of the patriarchs, which is Adam and Noah and all these guys and Moses. And then somewhere in the midst, you have kings where God's people are in the promised land. And you've got David and Saul and some of these familiar names. And then there is a point of the prophets where they're all pointing us towards Jesus coming. And Elijah is one of the greatest of these prophets. Now, Elijah was not necessarily liked by everyone, and especially not by some of the leaders of his time. And he had this great victory on the mountain over the prophets of Baal, who was another god that some worshipped. And then after this great victory, one of the kings and queens, they were not happy with him, Ahab and Jezebel. You may have heard of Jezebel. And Jezebel wants Elijah dead. And Elijah, even though he's had this great victory, he runs. And he finds God in the presence of God on a mountain. Now, something I didn't mention about Moses is Moses also, when he is first called by God, finds the presence of God on a mountain. And now we find here Elijah and Moses in the presence of God on a mountain. And here they are with Jesus. Now, one question you may think of, if you don't just read through these stories and you start to think kind of critically, is how in the world do Peter, James, and John know this is Moses and Elijah? There's no pictures in their history book of Moses and Elijah. They don't have a history book. I've often wondered, are they wearing name tags? Anytime we get together, we've got to put name tags on, Moses and Elijah tags. I don't know. And I wish I had a great answer for you, but for whatever reason, they're quickly able to figure out this is Moses and Elijah. Is this God putting this into their minds? Is this something within what is being said? Because they're talking, and we don't get a record of what they're talking about, but they're talking about something. But however they know that this is Moses and Elijah, and it's a very significant thing that they are seeing, something unlike they've ever seen or even heard of before. Peter said to Jesus, "Rabbi, it is good for us to be here. This is the most amazing thing possibly anyone has ever seen." And his first thought is, "Well, it's good for us to be here." A little bit of understatement. "Let us put up 3 shelters, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." He did not know what to say. Not that ever stops Peter from saying something. And if you don't know a lot about Peter, Peter is one who likes to speak before he thinks sometimes, which is comforting to a lot of us, I know. He did not know what to say. They were so frightened. Because before them they have Moses, who has been dead for a long time, and Elijah, who has been gone for a long time, and Jesus, who is shining in a way that they can't completely comprehend. And they're a little bit frightened, but Peter wants to say something. So he says, "Let's build these tents." And he says, "It's good for us to be here." Now, why does he want to build tents? Who knows? Maybe this is just one of the commentators I read looking into this thought he wants to lengthen this moment. And so maybe if we build some shelters, everybody will just want to stick around for a little while. Maybe he has some questions to ask Moses and Elijah. Maybe he just wants to be here longer. There are some who think there was a feast that the Israelites used to celebrate called the Feast of Booths. And the booths were basically tents. We don't think booths a lot, but basically they were tents. And they would set up these tents and they would celebrate. And some think maybe he's trying to do something that looks kind of like that. Some feel like, you know, God in their mind resided in a tabernacle for a while, and here's another chance to build something like that. For whatever reason, Peter decides, let's build some tents. This is what we should do here. And then a cloud appeared and covered them. Okay, so I imagine this cloud coming in and just almost becoming a fog around them. And a voice came from the cloud and said, "This is my son, whom I love. Listen to him." Now, this may sound a little familiar to you if you're familiar with the story of Jesus, because if you look back in chapter 4 of Matthew, or also in the accounts of Luke and of Mark, when Jesus is baptized, the Spirit descends like a dove and says, "This is my son whom I love, in whom I'm well pleased." Now, the difference between the baptism account and the transfiguration account is listen, which quite honestly is probably the struggle folks are having with Jesus to this point. And if you remember last time was when things in Mark, in chapter 8, took the turn from being kind of easy and things that you're excited about, healings and miracles and just a lot of good stuff, to this is about to get difficult. And Jesus is going to suffer, and as a result, some of his followers are going to suffer for telling this story, and he is reminding, the Spirit has comes here, listen to him. And I think that's the message for us this morning, too. In this amazing story, in the midst of it, if there's a takeaway, are we listening to him? Suddenly, when they looked around, they no longer saw anyone with them except Jesus. Now, why does this matter? For a lot of reasons. And if we look at the book of Hebrews, which we find later in the New Testament, there's an awful lot there about the need for these new Christians who were once Jews to put some of the Old Testament ideas behind them, to put some of what they were focusing in on behind them, and instead to focus in on Jesus, who was greater. Because to this point, a lot of the Israelites would look back to probably Abraham and Moses and Elijah as it. They were just the ones that everyone would look to, everyone would place on a pedestal. And God is giving the message here that although they are up there, compared to Jesus, they're nothing. And so Moses and Elijah fade away, and they no longer see anyone but Jesus. And for us, only Jesus is enough. And we've talked before about this idea of are we saved by Jesus and this, or does Jesus and something give us power? And if I only had Jesus and this in my life, whatever all those ands are, we have to put away, because it is just Jesus. Jesus is the thing that really matters. As they were coming down the mountain, Jesus gave them orders, as we mentioned at the beginning, not to tell anyone what they had seen until the Son of Man had risen from the dead. right? You have now been a part of the most amazing experience. You are not even among the crowds. You're not even among the inner disciples. You're not even among the 12. You are just these three people have probably laid your eyes on the most amazing thing anyone has seen, and now go back and don't say a word about it. And you will notice throughout the first part of Mark, as we're reading through as a church together, and if you've got a bulletin, on the back page of that bulletin, every week is where we're trying to read this week, you will notice as we're reading through that several of the things Jesus has done to this point, he will end with, don't tell anybody. I have healed you, now don't tell anyone how you have been healed. I have changed your life, now just don't go talk about that thing. And here, to these three, you have seen this amazing thing, now just don't go tell anyone about it. And this will be the last time we see this in the book of Mark, because the doors to all of his story are about to open up for everybody. But here he says, don't tell anyone. Until the Son of Man has risen from the dead, they kept the matter to themselves, discussing what rising from the dead meant. Now, we just sang about it a few minutes ago. Up from the grave he arose with a mighty triumph for his foes. We have taken the resurrection to be a very important part of this story, but to the people of this time, the idea of resurrection from the dead at some point, the idea of eternity, that was something they were familiar with. The idea of a person rising from the dead, that's unheard of. That's not something that happens. And so these three apostles start to discuss among themselves, and notice, this is the one time where Peter does not speak up to Jesus. They're just discussing among themselves, what is he talking about? What does this mean? Now, for us, I think this is a place where the world struggles with us too. Because the idea of someone rising from the dead, this is the piece of the story of Jesus that they just don't quite wrap their heads around. There are, I'm sure, people out there now searching for a grave that they can somehow prove is the grave of Jesus. Excuse me. You might remember a couple years ago, I think it was now, there was a story that everyone was sharing and everybody was looking into about this bone box that was found in the Middle East. And basically what would happen is they would bury and gradually the bodies would turn to just bones somewhere along the way. They would put these bones into a box and that was the thing. And they found an inscription and they thought, this is the bone box of Jesus, which was shortly after this whole thing surfaced, proven not to be true, because there is no bone box of Jesus to be found, because he has risen. And people struggle with this idea because it sounds too impossible. Although, honestly, if you start to look at Scripture from a human standpoint, a lot of it sounds too good to be true, doesn't it? A lot of it sounds impossible, and it's the power of God working throughout all of this to happen. Now, Paul talks about it this way in 1 Corinthians. You might ask the question, does the resurrection matter? Is it an important part of the story? Is it essential to what we do? And I think yes, and Paul makes it very clear that it is. But if it is preached that Christ has been raised from the dead, how can some of you say there is no resurrection of the dead? If there is no resurrection of the dead, then not even Christ has been raised. And if Christ has not been raised, our preaching is useless, and so is our faith. You know, talk about a useless sermon. If Christ has not been raised from the dead, I've been killing a lot of time up here. This is essential to what we believe, that he has been raised. And for the disciples, they're just starting to open their eyes a little bit to this idea of what he's been trying to tell them all along. He's going to have to suffer, but that suffering is not going to be the end for him or for us. More than that, we are then found to be false witnesses about God, for we have testified about God that he has raised Christ from the dead, but he did not raise him if in fact the dead are not raised. For if the dead are not raised, then Christ has not been raised either, and if Christ has not been raised, your faith is futile, you are still in your sins. Then those who have also fallen asleep in Christ are lost. If only for this life we have hope in Christ, we are of all people to be most pitied. But Christ has indeed been raised from the dead, the first fruits of those who have fallen asleep. For since death came through a man, the resurrection of the dead comes also through a man. He has been raised. And I know we're going to get to a point in our culture where we look at that and hide eggs for some reason. I don't know how those things are related. But we understand that he has been raised from the dead. And because he has been raised, we too can be raised. And they asked him, back in Mark chapter 9. Why do the teachers of the law say that Elijah must come first? And Jesus replied, to be sure, Elijah does come first and restores all things. Now notice the question they ask him is not about the resurrection, because that's a little too big right now. Let's get back to an Elijah discussion, because he was just here a minute ago. And let's figure out what the teachers of the law are talking about. To be sure, Elijah does come first and restores all things. Why then is it written that the Son of Man must suffer much and be rejected? But I tell you, Elijah has come, and they have done to him everything they wish, just as it is written about him. They've done to Elijah everything they wish. Now, what they don't get is, yes, Elijah himself has come back in Old Testament days, but the one who is going to represent what Elijah has done, John the Baptist, has also come. And John the Baptist has come announcing Jesus, and they did to him exactly what they wanted to do, which is they did not listen, and now he is imprisoned and he is killed because they did not want to hear the message that they were being given. Now, that's why the message of all of this is listen to him. Because what we tend to do when it's a message that we do not want to hear is the same thing the leaders of this time did when they encountered someone like John the Baptist. Close their ears to it all. And there are things about the teachings of Jesus that are difficult. And we looked at some of them last time as he started to talk about the death he was going to have to die and the suffering that he would do and the fact that following him means difficulty sometimes. And for us, there are probably teachings of Jesus that we struggle with. We're going to look shortly at the idea of a rich person who comes in and says, what is it I need to do? And he says, well, sell what you have and give to the poor. We're going to look at the commands that he gives and realize that some of those commands are easier than others. And what our tendency as people is, and it's no different than these three or his apostles or his disciples or the crowds that follow, is to pick out the pieces we like and to really run with those. And the stuff that we're not as interested in, we don't really want to talk about as much or think about as much. But that spirit that descends within the cloud and says, listen to him, might as well be saying to us, listen to everything he has to say. Understand that some of it is easy and some of it is difficult, but we must listen to him. And if you're not listening to him this morning, I think he's calling out to all of us today to listen. I think he's calling out to all of us that we need to follow, that we need to understand that sometimes that following is going to take us in directions that we do not want to go, just as it led him down roads that were difficult in his own life. For us this morning, we tend to shy away from those. We tend to, as we talked about in Bible class this morning, prefer for things to be easy. We prefer for things to go more smoothly. And Jesus is being honest with his apostles here when he says it's not always going to go smoothly for you. This morning, he wants us to listen. And the question for us is, are we listening or are we, like so many, just putting our fingers in our ears and not paying attention to what he has to say? Part of what he tells us is that he brings us resurrection. And if you like the idea of when this life is over, that's not where things end, he would love for you to be with him in eternity. He would love to see you confess his name. He would love to see you live for him. He would love to see you be baptized and to change your life. If you have done that, and you have just stopped listening somewhere along the way, he would love to see you come back. He would love for you to see the amazing things in your own life. This morning, if there's something we can pray about for you, if there's something your church family can do to help, or if you'd like to take him on in baptism, please come while we stand and sing.